This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of August 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of August 2012, which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, this week's announcements, we start with What's On, and you may be interested in a special tour of Winchester Cathedral, which is called Unlocking the Secrets. Some of the best-kept secrets of the cathedral will be revealed during the tour, which takes place every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m, and that's until the end of September. And some of the best-kept secrets are going to be told to you on the tour of the cathedral. It's a free tour. There's no requirement for pre-booking, but you will have to pay the normal cathedral entry charge. So that's 1:30 Wednesdays, Unlocking the Secrets, a tour of Winchester Cathedral. Also at Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday the 7th of August at 1 p.m. is a lunchtime concert with Christian Haig on the organ. That's a free concert with a retiring collection. And next week at the Everyman Cinema Winchester are two films, The Dark Knight Rises and Searching for Sugar Man. And you can get more information or make bookings on 0871 906 9060. That's 0871 906 9060. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 3rd of August at 5:35 a.m. and begins at 8:49 p.m. Next Wednesday, the 8th of August, it ends at 5:42 a.m. and begins at 8:40 p.m. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826, and there's a card with Lynn's details inside your wallet should you have a problem. Now, the main headlines this week: midwifery services facing a shake-up, Ken TV proves a turn-off, and Winchester out in force to welcome the start of the Olympics. So, the first headline story is as follows. Midwifery services facing a shake-up. Midwives at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital are facing an uncertain future in a wide-ranging review of working practices, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. Staff in the obstetrics and midwifery departments could lose their jobs or face pay cuts as part of a regional shake-up of women's health services, according to a source from the hospital who asked not to be named. Midwives, nurses and managers could have their pay downgraded from band 7 to band 6, causing cuts of up to £6,000 per year, it is claimed. Staff working less than 30 hours a week may have to increase their hours, accept reduced pay or give up their jobs. The source said, "The only way the department can save money now is to downgrade midwife pay. The midwives there are very, very scared. Some are single parents who now won't be able to pay the mortgage." The source added that the hospital's special care cot could also be removed to cut costs. They said, "If that happens, Winchester will become just a low-risk, midwife-led birthing centre." But the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the hospital, denied jobs were at risk. Donna Green, Director of Nursing and Deputy Chief Executive, said, "We're reviewing all clinical services in terms of what we provide and how we maintain the best quality care. There's a review of the whole skill mix across Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover. We're going through a consultation right now, telling staff what we're doing and where we're moving to. But it's highly unlikely any midwives will lose their jobs. And it's not true part-time staff will have to increase their hours. We're looking at how many midwives we need and where we need them. and there will be a review of some of the pay bandings, but that's part of a national review. She said any staff who had new pay bands would have their current pay protected for several months before changes take effect, and possibly years, depending on their role. Ms Green added there were no plans to close the special care cot. She added, our intention is that special care baby services continue on site. John Skews, Director of Employment Relations and Development at the Royal College of Midwives Trade Union, criticised any trust trying to cut midwife pay. He said, midwives have already endured pay freezes and are working harder to keep up with the rising birth rate and increasing demands on maternity services. They're already doing more work for less pay. It's a betrayal of the hard-working NHS staff delivering vital frontline services. And he added, the RCM is absolutely opposed to any attempts to reduce the pay of midwives and their colleagues in the NHS. We're challenging these moves, especially as we're currently involved in a consultation on a national review of the pay agreement for midwives and other health staff. A spokesman for the RCM added it was not aware of any plans to cut pay at the RHCH.
Kin TV proves a turn-off. Viewing figures have plunged for Kin TV after Hampshire County Council forked out more than £200,000 to broadcast meetings live. More than 800 people tuned in to watch the first televised budget-setting meeting last February when the ruling Tories approved a £45 million package of cuts. But just 108 people watched May's meeting, while last month's meeting attracted only 57 viewers. As previously reported, the council spent £223,000 on audio, video and web streaming equipment and paying an outside company to operate it for the first year. County chiefs hoped to open up council meetings to a wider audience. But Councillor Keith House, Liberal Democrat opposition spokesman, said, the Liberal Democrats have always said this was a waste of money and could have helped keep library hours up or more buses or youth services in place. It's always been a conservative vanity project. Christine Melsom, coordinator of Anti-Council Tax Group, Is It Fair?, said, what a waste of money. I'm not at all surprised, because council meetings are terribly boring and I'm interested in local politics. However, Councillor Colin Davidovitz, the county's communications chief, said he was not disappointed by the viewing figures and claimed it was a good use of taxpayers' money.
Winchester out in force to welcome start of Olympics. For once the sun was shining for an estimated 4,000 people who watched the opening ceremony of the London Olympics outside Winchester Cathedral. Families, students and pensioners all ditched the sofa and opted for the grass as they took in the spectacle on a giant screen at Winchester Cathedral last Friday. It was the biggest turnout of the public since, well, since the Olympic torch was carried through the city on July the 11th. Live images from the Olympics and the Paralympics will be broadcast on the 6-metre by 4-metre screen until August the 12th and from August the 29th to September the 9th. To start proceedings, the Dean of Winchester Cathedral, the Very Reverend James Atwell, and then the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, addressed the crowds via the big screen. The Mayor said, it will, for most of us, be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and what better setting to watch it than here in the outer close of Winchester's magnificent cathedral. Jointly financed by Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, Winchester BID and Winchester Cathedral, a City Council spokesman said the screen itself costs £30,000. Further associated costs of £30,000 have been covered by grants from government and the Olympics executive. Speaking after the event, the mayor said, "We all saw everything there was to see, and people were cheering and laughing at appropriate times. The Green is the biggest open space in the city centre, and it's fantastic that the cathedral has given us permission to use the space for things like this." The initiative was well received. Claire Simmons, 22, a sales assistant from Eastleigh, said, "My boyfriend and I drove here. He wasn't sure at first, but I talked him into it. I reckon this is much better than watching it at home. It's lovely here." Winchester was represented at the opening ceremony in London by singer-songwriter Frank Turner, who grew up in Mearnstoke. He was asked by director Danny Boyle to warm up the crowd at the Olympic Stadium before the official ceremony. Frank said he felt nervous playing to millions across the world, but was helped by playing two dress rehearsals to full crowds. Frank added, "By the time Friday rolled around, it was like, we've done this before. It was quite weird." Danny did a fantastic job on the ceremony. "It was really cool and I really enjoyed playing. But I won't lie, I was nervous." Meanwhile, many Winchester residents were up early last Friday to literally ring in the Olympics. Around 30 people took to the steps of Winchester Guildhall to mark the start of the Games with a peal of bells at 8:12 a.m. led by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson. It was part of a cultural Olympiad event, which saw bells ringing out across the country.
And that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. So firstly, the death announcements for this week. Booth. John Booth died peacefully at home on the 29th of July. Harvey, John Henry Arthur Harvey, known as Tom, who died at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 86. Knight, Sue Knight, died on the 24th of July after a short illness, aged 74. Lavender, Mervyn Lavender, who died suddenly but peacefully after a long illness, aged 74. Rich, William Joseph Rich, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 25th of July. Shipway, John Shipway, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 84. Spittle, Joan Spittle, née Croft, who died peacefully on the 23rd of July, aged 99. Vickers, Jackie Vickers, died peacefully at Berwick Court Nursing Home, aged 89. And Ward, Stanley Morgan Ward, died peacefully at home, aged 84. And now we move on to Christian comment. Shirley, please.
This is headed Participating in the Race of Life, and it's written by Terry E. Hemming. One of the results of the excitement of the Olympic Games is that new heroes are being created. People unknown before become household names as they strike gold or smash world records. We all recall the heroes of our childhood who inspired us. Along with my generation, I remember thinking I was Roger Bannister as I ran down Romsey Road on the way to my grandmother's house. Today's young people will be on their bicycles, swimming in the pools, running round the racetracks, dreaming that they are their heroes and hearing the applause as they dream they come in first. That is good. It is what the Olympic Games should do. It should inspire us to have a go. It may be true that the heroes are more for the young to aspire to and the older to admire, yet it is to encourage all of us to be active. There is a great contradiction in sitting in comfort watching athletics while we eat junk food. In the UK, we lost the fun and excitement of celebrating many of the saints' days when we became part of Protestant Europe. It is good that the Anglican Church never forgot them and that they are being remembered once more again. I'm also glad that we are commemorating new heroes of the faith, though perhaps disappointed that we do not have the machinery or bravery to declare them saints anymore. In the coming week, we shall be remembering John Mason Neal, a Victorian hymn writer, Dominic, a medieval priest who founded the Order of the Preachers, and Mary Sumner, our local hero who lived in Oresford and then the Close at Winchester Cathedral, who founded the Mothers' Union. We need imagination like young children to think that we can match our heroes, to be inspired by their example of doing good and making a difference. Just as the gold medalist may not make us believe that we shall ever hear the thunderous applause of the Olympic clouds, but help us make resolutions to be more active and to find the sport which we enjoy, so the heroes of faith should inspire us. We cannot be happy just to sit and watch while we munch and grow fatter. Similarly, we may know that we shall never be in the same league as John Mason Neal, Dominic, or Mary Sumner. But that does not mean we give up and do the spiritual equivalent of sitting in an easy chair watching their achievements. We need to be stirred into action to make our contribution in the race of life.
Thanks, Shirley. Now we move on to letters to the editor, and the first one's going to be read by Peter.
Thank you. And the first letter is written by Peter O'Shaughnessy, and it's headed, Council's White Elephant Could Be Home for Chesil Theatre. Sir, Chesil Theatre's buoyancy seems to have gone to its head, chronicled July the 26th. Its plans for expansion, if approved, would entail desecration of the site on which it stands and some adjacent to it. Yet, clearly there is a case for Chesil having larger premises. Solution? Let the council either demolish or radically modify the infrastructure of its white elephant, Avalon House, which has remained unoccupied for years, and create a theatre complex on the site. This should include an open stage, as well as one with a proscenium arch. Small is best for amateur actors, so maximum capacity for each should be set at 200. Concomitantly, restore St. Peter's Church in some form, which I leave to others to propose. One thought that springs to mind is for it to be a museum celebrating the city's rich ecclesiastical heritage. This might draw attention to such churches as the neglected St. John's in St. John's Street and the Saxon one at King's Worthy. Let the visitors see what this city of churches and monasteries might have looked like before King Henry VIII laid so much of it to waste. Abbey Gardens? Friar's Gate? Wherefore the names? St. John's, Winchester, Charity, Almshouses? What might they have looked like in 1500? And that was from Peter O'Shaughnessy, The Broadway, Winchester.
This next letter is from Mr. Halliwell, St. James Villas. How will Silver Hill be any different? Sir, I find it strange that you can trumpet abroad, presumably encouraged by Winchester City Council or their officers, that some 80 organisations have expressed interest in taking space in the abomination called the Silver Hill Development. Presumably none of these organisations have seen the High Street and the many properties in it that are now empty, or are aware of the trend whereby there are always shop properties in the High Street available to rent. What makes them, or indeed the City Council and its officers, think that Silver Hill will be any different from the High Street? Perhaps the absence of a street market in Silver Hill might make a difference, but I doubt it. Perhaps there will be a substantial discount in Silver Hill on the rents that are demanded in the High Street, but I doubt this also. We've been promised details on the finances of Silver Hill and Winchester City Councils and our exposure. Why cannot the council let us have the figures instead of the public relations exercise put forward in your last issue? And that's from W.A.C. Halliwell, Mr. St. James Villas, Winchester.
And this one from Councillor Colin Davidovits, headed saddling borough with huge debts. Sir, what cheek Councillor Keith House, leader of Eastleigh Borough Council, has in making misleading statements to the press, Chronicle, July 26th, about the money Hampshire County Council is saving and setting aside to protect vital services, despite draconian cuts the government is making in the amount of taxpayers' money it passes on to the council. Contrast this with the actions he is taking. While the county has saved over £100 million to safeguard services, he is saddling his residents with huge debts by borrowing over £100 million for property speculation. We have learned that £3 million of this was spent to fend off legal protests from businesses whose jobs would be threatened by his speculative ventures. Another part of this borrowing is £35 million for a luxury hotel for a local sports club that can't afford to pay it themselves at a time when Eastleigh residents are crying out for affordable homes. He tries to imply that the County Council has cut services when the truth is that it has reduced running costs by merging and restructuring departments, selling buildings and cutting costs by not replacing staff who leave and providing voluntary redundancy, thus only making 17 staff compulsorily redundant out of a reduction of some 1,500 posts. It is using the savings and capital received to improve services by increasing the funding of adult and children's services by £14 million and a capital investment of £45 million in extra care provision, as well as a huge investment in roads and improving access to information and services to residents, and putting council debates on the internet. It is also cutting the real cost of council tax by freezing it for the last 3 years, despite steep rises in inflation. This might not provide a dramatic headline, but that is the real story about how the county is relieving pressure on its residents and safeguarding the services that are so vital for their well-being during this period of financial crisis. Councillor Colin Davidovits, Hampshire County Council, the Castle, Winchester.
The next letter is from David Harfield and it's headed County Saves as it Slashes Services. Sir, it is disgusting that Hampshire County Council can invest over £300 million of taxpayers' money while cutting services, Chronicle July 26th. This is not their cash, but the taxpayers of Hampshire. Services for the elderly in particular are slashed. I've already written about the closure of Cornaway's care home in Kingsworthy and have been told the council is investing in extra care and care at home. Adult services have assessed all the residents because they can't look after themselves at home, which is why they are there. But the council is reluctant to spend £3 million on modernising these good quality facilities, so all the residents are now very upset and not wanting to be uprooted from a home they love. £3 million to Hampshire County Council is a drop in the ocean. Cornaways is the only older people care home in the area, apart from West Holm, which is all dementia. I would ask your readers to lobby the council on this subject. The County Council elections are in May 2013, so hopefully we can let these uncaring councillors know what we think of them by voting them out. That's from David Harefield, Avondale Park, Golden Common.
The next letter is from Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester. Census figures are a wake-up call. Sir, national and local census figures showing massive and unsustainable population growth, mostly from immigration, should serve as a wake-up call to central government and local authorities. With coverage in the Chronicle of problems we face nationally which are reflected locally, such as unemployment, crowded schools, food price inflation, shortages of water, power cuts, rising pollution, traffic congestion, crowded trains and decreasing biodiversity, we should already have been alerted. All these problems are worsened by a growing population. Thank goodness for people such as Richard Stobart and Claudia Goss, letters July the 26th, voicing their concerns about the population time bomb and thinking about the long-term well-being of our nation and world, rather than the short-term benefit to a few who profit from population growth. But don't expect our council officers to behave responsibly. They actually have a policy of importing population into the district in order to boost economic activity. World population has doubled since I took food to people starving in Africa over 40 years ago. Now 1 billion are hungry and a further billion suffering from malnutrition. This leads to resource wars, often disguised as racial or religious wars, but where the root causes are competition for food, water and energy. The examples of 1 million killed by their competitors in Rwanda, almost 2 million killed in the Sudan, and tensions on the borders of Russia, China and India show why we must control our population and safeguard our resources and our borders. There should be a national moratorium on building on farmland, because we are already dangerously dependent on importing food from countries which are not reliable sources long term. As individuals, we should only have children we can support without state help. And net immigration should be zero until we can sustain our population from our own food, water and energy resources. This could become a green and pleasant land again, but our focus must shift from consuming to caring for each other and for the environment. And that's by Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this one is headed New Scheme Needs Some River Walks, and it's written by Mrs. Pearl Gibbons. Sir, re last week's front page story headlined Shops in Line for Silver Hill. My family moved from Lower Brook Street when I was aged 14, and I am now in my 70th year. Yes, the Brook Centre was built, but it still remains half full. Maybe it would increase the footfall if they were to relocate the post office here, along with perhaps an estate agent, bank, or building society, and maybe a co-op even. Perhaps it's time to consider a new plan for Silver Hill too. Open up the river areas and combine them into landscaping with the shopping facilities, making it an attractive place to visit. Just take a look at Salisbury as an example. Their river walks and variety of shops are beautiful. We know Winchester is in dire need of a new bus station. Whatever must visitors think, with no comfort facilities or restaurant at all? It hasn't changed in all my lifetime. Will it ever? We have a unique opportunity in the redevelopment of this area, and to get it right will give Winchester something to be very proud of. As a footnote, can anyone tell me how does one now visit Salisbury by public transport? Pearl Gibbons, Mrs. Chandler Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. So now we step back in time, and the first one is 200 years ago, 1812. West End Fair terminated in a fatal catastrophe to the merriest personage of that place, the clown to Saunders' corps of horsemen and tumblers, in returning to the public house where he lodged, met with a party of peace officers and others, with whom he fell into some altercation, which ended in blows. when some of the peace officers drew their cutlasses and the clown was so desperately wounded that he died on Thursday morning. And a second item from 200 years ago. Notice is hereby given that the tolls arising at the toll gate, called Weak Gate, upon the turnpike road from the town of Stockbridge to the city of Winchester, and the tolls arising at Bar End Gate, upon the turnpike road from Winchester through to Stephen's Castle Down near Bishop's Waltham, will be let separately by auction to the best bidder at the Guildhall of Winchester on the 11th day of August at 11 of the clock.
And this one is of 50 years ago, 1962. Hampshire farmers adopted a wait-and-see attitude when they refused to support local market gardeners in a request for outright condemnation of the common market. The issue, brought before the NFU County Executive at Winchester on Monday, sparked one of the most controversial debates for some time. The market gardeners, who fear their livelihood will be strangled, had asked the executive to support their call for complete common market opposition. And this second item is, what a difference between this and the parish hall was heard at the opening of the new branch of the county library at Broad Street, Oresford, on Monday. As a library centre, the hall was all it should not be, badly lit and situated, and approaching dilapidation. The new premises present a striking contrast. A pleasingly decorated room has been provided, equipped with everything, both for the borrower's and the librarian's convenience.
And from 25 years ago, that's 1987, we have two items. The first, the scope of the M3 inquiry to be reopened in September must be widened, objectors urged last week. Mr. Alan Weeks, Secretary of the Winchester Ratepayers and Residents Association, told the new inspector, Air Vice Marshal Charles Morme, that the local situation had changed so drastically there was no way that the hearing could be regarded merely as an extension of the 1985 inquiry. Local government officers at Winchester City Council have been angered that a pay review has been carried out secretly. The council asked for written suggestions by September, when the issue was to be discussed by councillors on recruitment and retention of staff. But that part of the review relating to salary levels was brought forward to July. This move was made in response to fears that the implementation of similar pay reviews among other councils would result in further staff defections.
Thank you. Now we move on to the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. Peter, you're on again.
Thank you. And it's headed, "It's all about the ratings, Ken. We should have told you so. Surely it's no surprise that viewing figures for live broadcasts from Hampshire County Council meetings are on the slide. After more than 800 people tuned in for the novelty value of watching February's budget-setting meeting, where the Tories approved a £45 million package of cuts, the figure slumped to only 57 last month. While the council should be congratulated on trying to come up with ways to engage people in the important business of local politics, this was an ill-judged waste of taxpayers' money to the tune of £223,000. With library opening hours, youth and children's services, the care of the elderly and council staff all facing the axe, it beggars belief that the so-called Ken TV was thought a good idea in the first place. There's more than enough dross to tune into already without having to watch some councillors waffling or scoring party political points. Councillors have a tough enough job already in this age of austerity to do what they're elected to do without having to perform on screen. Far better for the council to pull the plug now and concentrate on more important issues. Ken TV has failed the screen test."
And now, first person, which this week is submitted by Rosemary McMullen. I can't remember the last time I bought a raffle ticket. I've only ever won £10, and it soon dawned on me that it was a mug's game to spend my money on something never likely to happen. However, this summer has been brightened considerably by the exciting national events. Swept along by the sporting fever of the Olympics, I was happy to join the queue of would-be Euromillionaires. Not that I expect to be one of the lucky 100, but it has set me wondering what I'd do if I did win. My first priority would be to buy my daughter, who rents her home in New Zealand, a family home with barbecue area, pool, wonderful landscape gardens, and every mod con. I have a horrible feeling that buying properties for myself would entail too much hassle, but oh, the holidays I could have. On the other hand, if I had my own palatial home on a tropical island, I could dream away the days letting the sun soak into my stiff neck and swimming in the ocean with an unlimited choice of books. No Kindle, thank you. Just that marvellous, brand new, imaginatively covered world of words to dip into. Candlelit evenings flooded with beautiful music conducted by the best in the musical world, and opera sung by the most talented and beautiful singers would be inspiring. Then, of course, I'd like to build new, efficiently run hospitals, with a rosemary ward, of course, and swell the coffers of deserving charities. I would swan around the world in my private plane or ocean-going cruiser, being hailed with grateful applause and garlanded with love. I'd definitely like my own seat at the world's opera houses and be able to go to the theatre whenever I wished. It would be fun to be able to finance my own theatre and encourage new talent. It would be lovely to summon my favourite chefs to cook for me and my friends. Perhaps James Martin should clear his diary just in case? I really do need a private masseur to ease my stiff neck, and a personal beautician, and I suppose a fashion advisor would be helpful. Sudden riches wouldn't make me as happy as finding that bargain dress, and a great night at the theatre is dependent on the quality of the performance, not on the seat. The sheer magic of an unexpected treat is never forgotten, and it might just become run-of-the-mill if available all the time. I went to the Sydney Opera House, and I saw Cirque du Soleil in Auckland, and I relive both events in my mind, and I'm excited all over again. So I won't be devastated if I'm not a Euromillionaire, but I am tempted to try and get on Deal or No Deal and chance winning a few thousand. Now we continue with further items of general news. Shirley.
This one, this article, is headed County Creates New Woodlands. 120 acres of public woods are to be created at three sites in Hampshire to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. These diamond woods are to be planted at Manor Farm Country Park in Burselton and sites in Andover and Basingstoke. The scheme is the brainchild of the County Council and the Woodland Trust, which aims to plant 6 million trees to celebrate 60 years of the Queen's reign. Said Hampshire County Council leader Ken Thornby, "It has long been a vision to ensure all the major urban areas of Hampshire have ready access to country parks and other major recreational sites. The new woodlands will provide improved access, add to the local biodiversity, and be used by the community for leisure, recreational and educational pursuits. In Manor Farm Country Park, 36 acres will be planted with broadleaf trees. Paths through the woodland will open up views into glades and across open countryside. Meanwhile, the Andover part of the Diamond Wood comprises 44 acres between East Anton, Enham and Smanel. local children will be involved in planting saplings in part of the wood. Officers are developing plans with Test Valley Borough Council, the Woodland Trust, Forestry Commission and Andover Trees Limited. In Basingstoke, 20 acres at Manydown will be planted. The land between Wooden St Lawrence and Worthing is protected by covenant and would be excluded from any future development. The County Council has also given oak saplings to more than 340 schools to plant and 100 town and parish councils. A spokesman for the Woodland Trust said the County Council had made a strong contribution to the national project and the new schemes would be of exceptional value to locals.
College plays host to Aussie Paralympic team. Sparsholt's Equine Facilities chosen as base by squad. A Winchester College is to be the venue for a Paralympic team from Down Under. The Australian Paralympic Equestrian Team was chosen as the base for Sparsholt College for its pre-London 2012 training. Sparsholt Equine students, lecturers and staff, along with the team manager, will care for and settle the horses in when they arrive at the centre next Thursday, that's August the 9th, before the riders arrive the following day. Once on site, riders and grooms will be accommodated at the Wessex Conference Centre located in the college grounds. They will leave for Greenwich Park along with the team's four horses, Kirby Park Irish Joy, Waikiki, Stratford Mantovani and Broadford VIC on August the 24th. Since equestrian was first introduced in the Atlanta 1996 Olympics, Australia has won 8 Paralympic Games medals, 2 gold, a silver and 5 bronze. Australian Paralympic Equestrian head coach Julia Bantam said, "We're confident our athletes and horses will benefit from the best possible facilities in the lead up to the Games, and we're looking forward to sharing our team's experience with the people of Winchester." The Equine Centre was included in the pre-Games training camp information provided by the London Organising Committee of the Olympic and Paralympic Games, that's LOCOG, more than 2 years ago, and the college has been working with Winchester City Council to attract a team to train in the area. Councillor Patricia Stallard, the City Council's portfolio holder for Culture, Heritage and Sport, said the council was delighted at the news. "We're lucky to have some world-class facilities in the local area and are proud to see them being utilised for such an important occasion," she said. "We hope that local people will get behind the Australian team and follow them with interest during the Paralympic Games. The athletes will compete in 3 dressage tests where they will have to perform a series of predetermined movements which differ by grade and ability, plus team, individual and freestyle tests. While training at Sparsholt, the Australian team will be holding a demonstration and lecture, and hope that students will be as involved as possible until they depart for Greenwich Park on August the 24th, ready to compete from August 30th to September the 4th.
I've got Bruce to thank for saving my life. A Winchester man who nearly bled to death after a freak road accident has thanked the medic who helped save his life. Jordan Griffin, aged 19, was on his 125cc motorbike near Winchester when it collided with a Ford Galaxy and part of the car trim sliced into his neck. A bystander administered crucial first aid, stemming the blood flow, before Basics medic Bruce Armstrong arrived on his motorbike within 4 minutes of the 999 call to administer a blood-clotting drug. Jordan of the Dell Kingsworthy said, "I've seen what can happen to people in motorcycle accidents, but it's weird to think it happened to me. It's almost like it didn't happen because I don't remember it. but I do feel like I have a second chance at life now. I lost 40% of my blood, but only stayed in hospital for 8 days because of the treatment Bruce gave me. So I'm very grateful, because without him, I wouldn't be here. Mr. Armstrong, aged 44, a nurse at Southampton General Hospital, used battlefield techniques to save Jordan's life. Currently lead for major trauma education, Mr. Armstrong is also a 22-year Territorial Army veteran who's served in Afghanistan. He said, "We brought together what we've learned in Afghanistan and are now using it in Hampshire. The dressing we used is used on the front line there. In the past, most people with Jordan's injury would not have survived. It was a really good team effort with the ambulance and police in the roadside in 20 minutes before we got him to hospital. It's a great feeling to have contributed to saving his life. To see him making good progress is fantastic. It's a real privilege to do the work we do." Jordan's mum Sue is now fundraising for Basics Hampshire, a charity in which off-duty doctors and nurses volunteer to provide emergency help. And the family are holding a charity raffle and disco at the Fareham Pub in Fareham at 7:30 on Saturday, August the 25th.
National Trust Holiday Fun. The National Trust is trying to get children off their sofas and outside this summer. Trust properties in Hampshire are offering free entry to children as an incentive to get families to enjoy the countryside. Hinton Ampner Garden in Bramdean, near Alresford, is one of the participating attractions and is hosting a family fun day on Sunday, August the 19th. Falconer Bob Dalton, who has given demonstrations on the BBC, is one of the highlights, bringing owls, peregrine falcons and kestrels, while the Alder Valley Brass Band will provide musical entertainment. There will also be face painting and a barbecue. The gardens open from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. with admission £6.85 for adults. Children can also download vouchers from nationaltrust.org.uk for its 50 Things to Do Before Your 11 and 3 quarters campaign, such as tree climbing, snail racing and kite flying.
Abbots Barton in frame for new council homes. Winchester Housing Bosses are looking to build some 60 council houses on a city estate, the first new council houses in the city for 25 years. The City Council is investigating developing several sites across Abbots Barton, the former council estate on the northern edge of the city centre. Sites include a grassy area off Dyson Drive, potentially large enough for around 20 homes, land off Chandler Road and three garage blocks. The City Council wants to build 100 new homes over the next 3 years and 300 over 10 years. Ian Tate, portfolio holder for new homes delivery on the Conservative-controlled council, said, "I have asked officers to look at Dyson Drive. It looks an ideal site and gives us an opportunity to start rolling out affordable housing in the area in meaningful numbers." He added, "We need to engage with the community to see what they value in the area." One local resident who asked not to be named said, "While some of my neighbours may be opposed, I think most accept that new houses need to go somewhere." Planning permission for housing next to Simmons Court has already been granted to Radian Homes, and building is expected soon, said Councillor Tate. Land off Chandler Road was also recently considered by the County Council as a site for a new primary school, but it was rejected in favour of a super school for 4 to 16-year-olds in the Westgate School in Fulford. Abbots Barton's three Liberal Democrat city councillors look poised to support the plans. Dominic Hiscott said, "It's an interesting idea. We are supporters of new council houses for the people of Winchester. we will be joining in the consultation that Ian Tate will be holding with local people. We currently have to build social housing on the back of commercial development. We would be getting social housing without having to build three times as much non-social housing. But Councillor Hiscott was less keen on developing garages, even if many of them are being used for storage of things other than cars. A housing committee will discuss the Abbots Barton issue on September the 18th.
Decision day for City Bar. A Winchester bar is set to find out next week whether it can stay open later. Bar 3-1 in The Square wants to extend its hours for playing music, dancing and selling alcohol to 2:30 a.m. on Mondays to Wednesdays, 3 a.m. on Thursdays to Saturdays and 1 a.m. on Sundays. But police, residents and ward councillors have all objected to the plan on various grounds, including violent incidents at the venue in recent months and potential noise problems. A City Council committee is set to meet next Tuesday afternoon, that's August the 7th, to decide the application. The meeting was due to take place on July the 3rd, but was postponed to allow police to gather more information. Since then, the bar has come into further criticism from some committee members on Winchester's Business Improvement District, as reported last week.
Karate course aims to boost Forces charity. An ex-serviceman who marched from Winchester to Romsey to mark last year's Remembrance Day is to cap off his fundraising efforts with a final push. Nigel Hosking, a prison officer, is to hold a karate course in a bid to raise more funds to go towards his final total for a Forces charity. Ex-Royal Green Jacket rifleman Nigel, who is a karate instructor and second Dan black belt, will be one of the teachers, and there will be sessions for beginners, intermediate and advanced. Whatever total is raised will then be handed over to the Rifles Care for Casualties appeal on the day. The appeal was set up in February 2010 to help soldiers injured in military operations and to provide family support and help with funerals of loved ones. Back on November 11th last year, Nigel set off at 11 a.m. on an 11-mile march run called Winchester to Romsey for Riflemen. He came up with the idea of an extra fundraiser after holding a similar event in May in aid of those affected by the tsunami in Japan. He served with the Royal Green Jackets in Northern Ireland, Cyprus and Gibraltar in the mid-1970s and is a former Hampshire Ambulance Service paramedic of more than 20 years. Nigel, a father of five, aged 52, said, "People should be aware that this is a continual, ongoing situation in active service. What people are aware of is the soldiers that are deceased. We always mention that. You don't hear, 'Seven soldiers came back today. One has lost both legs. One's lost an arm.' Every single day, they are coming back." The course runs at Fleming Park Leisure Centre in Eastleigh on Sunday, September the 9th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and costs £10 for adults and families, £5 for juniors, with additional donations welcomed. Anyone interested can turn up on the day.
Ex-councillor must pay back £115,000. A former parish councillor near Alresford, who carried out a massive fraud against his employers and spent £35,000 on guns alone, has been ordered to repay nearly £115,000. Christopher Norkett, who sat on councils at Cheriton and Tichborne, fraudulently ordered hundreds of mobile phones and intercepted the shipments at a Royal Mail sorting office before selling them privately. The former senior manager for telecoms giant Cable and Wireless was believed to have profited by £417,000. Now, a judge has granted prosecutors permission to seize his assets, including 14 hunting rifles and shotguns. Norkett of Raeburn Close, Cheriton, was jailed for 2 years and 8 months earlier this year after admitting 9 counts of fraud. If he fails to pay the amount ordered by the judge within 6 months, he faces a further 2 years being added to his sentence. When Norkett was sentenced, Judge Ian Granger told him, "The greed is breathtaking. These were disgraceful offences carried out over a long period of time." Norkett, 44, had such a big budget at communications firm Cable and Wireless, he was able to order hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of mobile phones without triggering any alerts. Last week, Norkett was brought back before Reading Crown Court for an application by the prosecution under the Proceeds of Crime Act. Abigail Husbands, prosecuting, said, "The application is for a confiscation order in the sum of £114,960.30. That is an agreed figure from the realisable assets." She added, "There are £2,000 owed in cash held by the police and about £35,000 held in assets by the police. That's the guns. The only asset the defendant will have to find is £2,576. Christopher Bauer, defending, asked the judge to acknowledge that the guns may fetch more, may fetch less than the £35,000 when they go to auction. Judge Granger granted the application under the agreed sums. He said that sum is to be paid as compensation to Cable and Wireless Worldwide. I allow 6 months' time to pay, and the period of imprisonment in default of payment will be 2 years.
Steam train blows in as couple enjoy special city tour. A blast from the past came to Winchester Station last Thursday, when A1 Steam Locomotive Trust's Tornado blew in as part of a journey across the nation. It was part of a Cathedral Express tour which travels around many of England's cathedral cities, including Winchester, Exeter, Canterbury and York. The steam train was due to be the Princess Elizabeth, featured during the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, but the engine failed a safety check. But Tornado had a royal connection itself last week as Prince Charles travelled to Northumberland on the train last Monday. Tornado was actually built in 2008 after 19 years of work by the Trust, but it is based on designs of A1 trains from 1949. For one couple, it was an even more special day as Dave and Grace Jones celebrated their diamond wedding anniversary. The couple from Northampton came to Winchester for the afternoon and were surprised with a horse and cart tour of the city. Winchester-based A.W. Jones Carriages provided the tour on the 122-year-old carriage. Driver and owner Tony Jones said, "I think we showed them everything Winchester has to offer, including the cathedral and Jane Austen's house." And there are two pictures, one for steam enthusiasts, a delightful picture of a steam train, crowd of people on the platform looking at it and photographing it, of course. And the other, a picture of Dave and Grace Jones in the back of the carriage being drawn by the two horses, Lucky and Gems, on their tour of the city.
Breakthrough in Alzheimer's research. It is an illness that brings misery to thousands of sufferers and their families across Hampshire. But Hampshire scientists have revealed that they have made a major breakthrough in the fight against Alzheimer's disease. It is hoped the groundbreaking study could lead to better ways of treating and preventing the dementia condition. important new research by a world-renowned team from the University of Southampton has examined how one of the most common genetic risk factors for Alzheimer's impacts the brain. For the first time, scientists now know how a gene present in half of people who develop the disease makes them more susceptible to it. Experts hope that knowledge can now be used to create effective ways of tackling dementia. Dr. Simon Ridley, head of research at charity Alzheimer's Research UK, which paid for the work, said, "Research like this makes the risk picture more complete and moves us closer to developing new treatments and preventions that can avert this devastating disease." The work, which involved studying mice, is part of a wider bid to find out what factors make people more likely to suffer from the disease and why. Scientists have known for some time that people with a certain risk gene have a much higher chance of developing Alzheimer's, and at an earlier age. But the study, part of almost £500,000 of ongoing research in Southampton and Brighton, funded by the charity, has discovered the difference that gene makes to the brain, clogging blood vessels with a toxic protein. Southampton-based Dr. Cheryl Hawkes, an author on the study, which was published in medical journal PLOS-1, said, "These initial results are really exciting because they help us to build a bigger picture of the factors influencing a person's risk of Alzheimer's. The next step will be to move this study from mice into humans to confirm that we see a similar change."
I read earlier an item on potential council houses at Appin-Spartan. This is a second item and it's headed "Row Over Council Homes Programme." Winchester Liberal Democrats were accused of scaremongering over plans for the first council house building programme in the city for 25 years. The Tory-controlled council has plans for 99 new homes in the next 3 years, including knocking down 4 houses in Milland Road, Highcliffe, to free up space to build 15. Recently, one tenant in Milland Road said the first she knew about the threat to her home was reading it in the Hampshire Chronicle. Lib Dem councillors said many tenants would be fearful about the future. Senior councillor Brian Collins said, "Some of the land is going to come from existing tenants' homes. Has any consideration been given to how scary it is to receive from a landlord to say, 'We're going to take your home away'? We have a tradition in this council and indeed as a country to stand up for the little people. Furthermore, we must make sure that we as a council do not become one of the big people who could be viewed as behaving in a bullying way." His proposal for an independent tenants advisory service to help allay fears was referred to a housing committee. Councillor Kim Kotlaib said few tenants would be asked to move. "We should not be scaring people," he said. Council leader Keith Wood said the Lib Dems were grandstanding. "They say they're in favour, but they're trying to rubbish what is happening," he said. "If they're going to play games, it is going to hold the job up and make people doubtful and make tenants nervous, when it is probably not going to affect them at all." The new build programme generally has cross-party support. Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney said, "If the council knocks down a few homes to build many, we should be biting the bullet and getting on with it." Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, said the main problem was finding suitable land. "One current problem is that the right to buy, dating back to the 1980s, meant the City Council no longer owns all of the estates, such as Stanmore, Winnell, Week and Highcliffe."
Renewable energy boost. An Alsford landmark will be used to create green energy after the City Council approved a renewable energy scheme. A hydro turbine will be installed in the River Arle, flowing downhill alongside the town mill in Mill Hill. But some residents of the mill, which was converted into five stories of housing, objected to the scheme at a planning committee. Philip Powell, an engineer, said the turbine would cause several problems for neighbours. He said, "I do not consider this scheme to be appropriate within the conservation area, and it will amount to the total destruction of a cherished feature. It will lead to the almost total loss of the white noise the weir creates, which dampens sounds of traffic from adjacent roads and other intrusive noises. This is insidious and intrusive and will adversely affect the quality of life for 15 householders." But applicant David Fitzgerald argued the turbines would create green energy from water that was traditionally used as a power source in the town. He said this proposal continues 800 years' history of water power at this site. There are benefits for the atmosphere, and the scheme will generate green energy and save between 35 and 50 tonnes of CO2 per year, which will help Winchester meet its carbon emission reduction targets. Mr. Fitzgerald added it would also improve the environment for fish. The approval is subject to no objection being raised by Natural England. If it does object, the decision will return to the committee.
This is headed Entrepreneur Jane's Passion for Pubs. And there's a photograph accompanying it with these people standing outside this pub called the Mucky Duck. Everyone knows the story of the ugly duckling turning into the beautiful swan, but a Winchester pub entrepreneur has turned that fairy tale on its head with her latest acquisition. Jane Gillin has taken over the White Swan pub in Hyde Street and renamed it the Mucky Duck. Owned by Green King, Miss Gillin has taken on the lease to add to her other pubs, the St. James Tavern in Rumsey Road, the Corner House in North Walls, and the Green Man in Southgate Street. Miss Gillin said, "I have had my eye on it for a while. I hate to see pubs failing, and when Green King approached me and asked if I wanted to take over, I said yes, straight away. I have a passion to rescue pubs. I have felt for ages that the one thing that's really missing is somewhere gentlemen can go and watch sport, but they can take their wives and girlfriends along, and they can be very comfortable too." She declined to say how much money she had spent on refurbishing the pub, but said there had been a substantial investment. Miss Gillin added the terms of her lease on the pub were still being negotiated, but she has long-term plans for the business. New manager Jack Norgate said, "We want to make it a fairly upmarket traditional sports bar with four big screen televisions showing a broad range of sports. The inside of the pub has been gutted with completely new furniture and it's looking fantastic now." Mr. Norgate, 27, who has worked in several pubs in Winchester, said they were not worried about competition for other Hyde pubs, such as the Hyde Tavern and the King Alfred. He added, "I have a lot of respect for the Hyde pubs, and they have done really well, but we are going for something different than they offer, so I don't think there will be much competition, as our client base will be different. The pub will also serve food using locally sourced ingredients, but Miss Gillin said food would not be the primary focus. The news comes as the rising sun on Magdalen Hill has also been taken over and is set to reopen after a four-year closure."
Suicide verdict on decorator. A Winchester decorator killed himself in a city graveyard, an inquest heard. Alan Dawkins, 40, was found hanged near St Bartholomew's Church in King Alfred Place, Hyde, in February. He had recently separated from his wife Victoria and had moved in with his mother in Rance's Way Badger Farm. Mrs Dawkins, also a decorator of Worthy Road, said that he had talked about killing himself before, in September 2011, but she did not think he would ever go through with it. She said, "I never thought he would hurt himself. I thought he was saying these things to hurt me because we had separated. The Saturday before he died, we had a bit of a row because he came over to my house and I had a male friend round. I don't know what conclusions he jumped to, but when he left, he said this was the last time he was ever going to see me." The inquest heard, Mr. Dawkins also texted his wife and left a card for her, explaining he was going to kill himself. He had also been drinking shortly before he died and was 2.5 times over the legal driving limit. But Sally Whitby, Assistant Deputy Coroner for Central Hampshire, said he was clear Mr. Dawkins wanted to end his life. She said, "Had this been an isolated incident, I may well have been persuaded by the alcohol that he did not mean to kill himself. But the threat he made the previous year, and the card and the text message, leave me in no doubt he did take his own life." She recorded a verdict of suicide.
BID outlines case for second 5-year term. Winchester Business Improvement District is gearing up to secure support for its second 5-year term. Members will vote in the autumn whether the bid should carry on or be dissolved. Members pay a levy of 1.68% of their rateable business value, but if the BID secures a second term, it will drop to 1.5%. Amy McCartan, BID Marketing Manager, told the meeting of members at Winchester Guildhall recently, "We feel we've delivered projects within budget. We're confident we can deliver what we are delivering for better value." Currently, the BID comprises 803 commercial properties. It's proposed to increase that to 813 by adding Winchester Cathedral, Winchester College, the shops in Kingsgate and College Street, and the Winchester School of Art. "Among the successes," said Miss McCartan, "have been chewing gum removal, tackling grubby hotspots, hanging baskets, improved Christmas lights, the funding of 3 police community support officers, and recycling contracts." One BID member had saved £6,000 on utilities through the BID negotiated contracts. The BID is also a coordinator of Shopwatch and Pubwatch, counter-crime initiatives that are both working successfully. New ideas include a bigger online presence, a new app for mobile phones, and a new map of places to eat and drink. The ballot of all businesses will be launched on September the 27th and closes at 5 p.m. on October the 26th, with the result known on October the 27th. Ms. McCartan said the BID wanted to hear ideas and suggestions from its members. It points out that if the vote is no, it will result in fewer police community support officers, fewer Christmas lights and hanging baskets, less street cleaning and graffiti removal, fewer events that bring thousands of visitors into the city, the loss of the waste management scheme, less marketing and promotion of the city and key shopping areas, fewer shopping maps and signage, and business representation in the city.
Olympics Past and Present at Exhibit. Find out more about the Olympics Past and Present at a free exhibition at Hampshire Record Office in Winchester until September the 1st. The Olympics in Hampshire showcases Olympians and Paralympians with a link to the county, such as 400-metre runner Ivan Thomas of Southampton, judo medalist Kate Howey of Andover, swimmer Rosalinda Hardiman of Portsmouth, and historic figures such as 1932 gold medalist Tommy Green of Eastleigh and cycling champion Charles Kingsbury of Portsmouth. venues used for the 1908 and 1948 games in Aldershot, Church Crookham, Portsmouth and Southampton are explored. There is also a chance to get up close and personal with a 1948 and 2012 Olympic torch at a free lunchtime lecture on Thursday, August the 30th. Hampshire Record Office on Sussex Street is open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m, 7 p.m. on Thursdays, Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m, closed August the 4th and 27th.
We heard just now an item about the Business Improvement District bid. This is the second item on how they're spending their money, and it's headed Capitalising on London 2012 Olympics. Winchester is hoping to capture business from the London Olympics through advertising in the capital. The city's Business Improvement District bid has paid £6,000 for posters at 25 sites on the transport network, including Waterloo, for 4 weeks. Amy McCartan, bid marketing manager, told the bid committee. The bid had also bought space for 2 months on 10 taxis in Basingstoke and 5 in Salisbury. The campaign slogans are "Come for the history, stay for the treasures," and "Come for the festivals, stay for the culture." It was devised by Talk Design and Print of Magdalene Hill and impressed bid members at the committee.
Village show is twice as nice. Everything from floral arrangements to man's best friend was on display at an event that brought out the residents of King's Somborne. The sun was shining as the recreation ground hosted King's Somborne and District Horticultural Society's 87th annual flower show and fete last Saturday. As in recent years, King's Somborne Companion Dog Show ran alongside the horticultural event, offering visitors a choice of entertainment. People came from as far away as Oxford and the Midlands to compete in a variety of categories. They included flowers, vegetables, floral arrangements, cooking, knitting and photography. Cooking categories included apple tarts, bread, marmalade, chutney and a gentleman-only contest for the best ginger parkin. There was also a contest for the best decorated Olympic-themed icing on a sponge cake. The charity jumper competition, where entrants knitted colourful jumpers to a set pattern, attracted 20 entries that will all now be sent to people in Romania. With music provided by Locally Silver Band, fete entertainment including a climbing wall, obstacle course built by King's Somborne Scouts, plant, book, card and cake stalls, a tombola, raffle, children's sport, a bouncy castle and games including golf putting and a coconut shy. At the dog show, canines competed in pedigree classes, junior handling and novelty classes. This year there were 65 entries, and Judge Julia Isles Hebert awarded the best in show to Callie, a mini smooth dachshund owned by Gina Salisbury from Ringwood. And there's a picture of Callie with her owner. To say she also won the best puppy, but she's very big for a puppy, standing pretty near chest height, so a very large dog.
Scandal of streetlight replacements. A Winchester architect has warned that the historic interest of many Winchester city streets is being gradually lost through piecemeal change. He was speaking after streetlights in College Street were removed and replaced with modern ones as part of a modernisation programme to replace more than 100,000 lights across Hampshire. George Somares Smith, pictured, picture is here in the little tiny picture with the article, he said, "It is absolutely scandalous. This is one of the most historic streets in one of the most historic towns in the south of England. One light is right next to Jane Austen's house. It changes the character and damages the sense of place. When I saw it, it was a mixture of shock and a kind of resignation. I couldn't quite believe it. I thought they would refit it like they have done over the last 100 years. When you deal with historic buildings, even the smallest change to a listed building involves so much paperwork and bureaucratic processes. These lights should not be under threat. I'm appalled no one is making a fuss about it. The whole street light program has been steamrolled through on the basis that it is more environmentally friendly with LED lights rather than tungsten. But that is a red herring. You could have kept the old lights and adapted them. Now Mr. Somaris Smith faces the modernisers may move on. Sorry, I'll read that again. He fears the modernisers may move on to other things. I'm worried it's going to be street signs next, he warned. A spokesman for the county council said, the street lights in College Street are the black historic style replacements, but they are waiting for new lanterns to be fitted and are temporary structures. The new historic lights have generally been very well received, particularly in areas such as Oram's Arbour and Hyde. The new lighting has many benefits, including lower energy bills, higher white light directed down onto roads and pavements, as well as reduced carbon emissions. We have been working closely with Winchester City Council and local heritage offices to ensure the historic character of Winchester's old streets is preserved for future generations.
A majestic day out in the forest. It was the last stop on her historic Diamond Jubilee tour, but clearly the Queen was saving the best until last. Tens of thousands of people turned the New Forest and Hampshire County show red, white and blue to welcome Her Majesty last Wednesday. On the hottest day of the year so far, crowds gathered as the royal party gave exhibits in the showground the seal of approval. Known for her love of the countryside and animals, the Queen did not stop smiling throughout the afternoon, and it was clear everyone, from toddlers to pensioners, adored her. The day to remember began when she arrived in style in a helicopter with the Duke of Edinburgh to a rapturous welcome. It was the only thing people were talking about across the showground at New Park in Brockenhurst, and people had begun lining her route in a bid to catch a glimpse of her as soon as they got through the show gates. Met by the show's president and television presenter, Alan Titchmarsh, and other local dignitaries, the royal couple meandered through the exhibits, charming everyone they met along the way. Their first stop was the old-time farming and blacksmiths area, where there were 60 vintage tractors displayed to mark the Diamond Jubilee. Some dated back to the start of the Queen's reign in 1952. She marvelled at the working forge, which was manned by both working blacksmiths and members of the armed forces. Next, the Queen, dressed in the same outfit she wore for granddaughter Zara Philip's wedding, a peach blue and white silk dress with a peach overcoat teamed with a matching peach hat, made her way through the dense crowds to members' enclosure, as well-wishers cheered her along the way. Here a string quartet played, and the Queen paused for lunch with Mr. Titchmarsh, where they dined on pâté and smoked salmon. After lunch, the Queen was handed a posy of flowers by 13-year-old George Payne of Christchurch. She then met representatives of the Minstead-based Fursley Gardens, which won a gold medal at this year's Chelsea Flower Show. Next, she had a tour around the Best of British tent, admiring local crafts and produce and meeting their designers. As temperatures nudged 30 degrees centigrade, that's 86 Fahrenheit, the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh took their seats in the President's box at the show's ring. A grand parade of 60 New Forest ponies to mark each year of the reign, and parade of cattle, sheep, horse-drawn carriage and Ringwood Brewery heavy horses were all on show. The royal party then entered the ring to meet the owners of the supreme beef cattle champion and the sheep champion of the day. Diamond volunteer and long service awards were presented to people who have made a significant contribution to the New Forest. Then the royal party was taken by car to New Forest Corner, an area of the show made up of 30 local organisations which have close ties to the forest, including photographers, pony breeders and the New Forest commoners. There the Queen planted the first of 60 English oak trees. A final stop was to the education area, where she watched children make the dessert eaten mess before she left the show for the day.
Overseas aid minister to face questions. Winchester will host a government minister at a public meeting to discuss the UK's overseas aid programme. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has arranged for Stephen O'Brien, a minister in the Department for International Development, to take questions from residents on the issue of Britain's aid budget. Mr. Bryan said, "This is an issue about which I've received a huge amount of correspondence from across my constituency, with very passionate and considered views expressed on all sides." Mr. Bryan and Mr. O'Brien will field questions on how money sent abroad for aid is used and the benefits to the UK of providing overseas aid. The meeting will be held at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Fulflood, on Thursday, September the 13th. Tickets, which are free, are required in order to attend. And to register, call 01962 791110. That's 01962 791110.
Meeting told of drunks and drug-taking. Antisocial behaviour, including drinking and drug-taking in a Winchester suburb, is getting worse, a meeting heard. Heavy drinkers and drug addicts are causing problems on the streets of Hyde, residents told a police-public liaison meeting on Monday. The meeting at Winchester Rugby Club saw more than 20 residents of Winnall, Hyde, Abbots Barton and Highcliffe put their views to Sergeant Matt Fancett. Many people pointed the finger of blame at Westview House, a support centre for homeless people on Hyde Gate, as a source of concern. Alan Lear of Alan Lear Motorcycles in Hyde Street said, "Over the last few years, it seems to have got much worse. We get people from the centre coming in and asking for money and things like that. There isn't a day goes by when we don't get problems of some kind." Counter Dominic Hiscock, who represents the area, said, "It's generally a peaceful and quiet area, and Westview is a good organisation, but this is a serious issue for a lot of people." Dave Fagan, a project worker at Westview, said, "We get residents from within the centre itself who come to us and complain about this kind of behaviour too. There is sometimes some stereotyping. We take people who are homeless and we get people who are on drugs, but we also get people with circumstantial problems, people who have just fallen on hard times. We do understand people's concerns, and we are there 24/7. There's always someone at the centre, so people can always call us when there are problems." Sergeant Fancett urged members of the public to contact the police whenever they saw antisocial behaviour or felt intimidated. "So," he said, "so much of what we do is intelligence-led. If people don't call us, we can't do anything." The three priorities set out at the end of the Partnership and Communities Together, PACT, meeting were to address antisocial behaviour in Hyde and in Highcliffe, and specifically on Garbett Road, Winnall.
The next headline says, "Damper on veg, but flowers are blooming good." A traditional summer show in a village near Alresford is still doing blooming well. The Byton and District Flower Show was held in the village hall on Saturday and attracted 173 entries from 28 people. The annual event celebrates not just flowers, but all kinds of locally grown produce, including fruit, cookery, as well as flower arranging and a children's section. Elaine Arnold, chairman of the show committee, said, "We had more entries than last year. Veg classes were down because of the weather, but there was a very good showing for the flowers. The roses and sweet peas were fantastic. It's one of the annual events in the village and a good opportunity to get people together." The cup winners were Roy Hurd, Gale Cup, highest aggregate marks in vegetable section, Sarah Jordan, Shaw Rose Bowl, best floral tribute. And there's a photograph here of the vegetable and flower judge, Brian Newman, with the show committee, which is Sarah White, Elaine Arnold, Sally Ellis, Adrian Arnold and Andrew White in the Boughton and District Flower Show on Saturday.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thank you to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.